We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in, guys, along for the ride with Hayes Car Lion, Lauren Brooks, and Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangie. Much to talk about on a Tuesday. You really don't know the song Sweet Music Man by Kenny Rogers? All the songs you know?
I don't think that I know it, but I don't know for sure.
How about, you don't know it either?
I do not know it either.
Huh. Really bothers
me. I mean, I might if I heard a couple bars.
Frank's been singing it, and it hasn't helped me. So.
Really, I mean, it's going to affect the friendship. It's going to affect the program. It's going to affect the radio station.
I don't know a ton of Kenny Rogers, though.
He makes a mean chicken.
Yeah, he does. He roasts it, I heard.
Yeah.
I heard he roasts that chicken. It's what happens. So, okay. That surprises me. I'm very surprised you don't know that song.
In the break, I'll listen to Kenny Rogers sing it.
Sweet Music Man.
And
give me you know that song. Give me you know every song. You know that song?
Well, here we go.
You don't have to wait till the break.
You don't know this?
No. Nope.
I do not know this.
I don't think Hayes will ever choose to listen to this again.
Okay. No, we hear the chorus.
Does it have this much intensity throughout the song?
Sounds like a Christmas song.
You'll hear it. You'll hear it. I can't believe you don't know that song. That just puzzles me. I'm puzzled.
Maybe here comes
the chorus.
Okay. I know the Gambler.
Stay with me.
Sound any more intense?
Sing your song, sweet music, man.
Nothing.
I've definitely heard that.
Okay.
I definitely have not.
Okay. So very good. It's very bothersome. You know. This is like this great song by Kenny Rogers.
We
need Kenny on an old rock Thursday is what we need.
It's a little slow for my musical.
Well, yeah, it's a ballad. Yeah. It's called a ballad.
Right, and I
news bulletin, they tend to be slow.
I know.
That's what
and
they're doing.
You know, I choose not usually to listen to ballads. I have to be in a sad mood to listen to ballads.
All right, so there you go. Is there a coach in Gainesville yet? Have you heard? Is there any word on the street?
Everything I'm hearing is that it's Billy Napier.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Billy Napier too. But you know, you never know till you know on one of those. You know, I mean, you don't know.
Right.
Till you know.
I mean, until you see him introduced at the press conference.
Right, yeah. Everybody seems to.
Do you think he'll do the gator chomp when he gets off the plane?
I would think.
Yeah.
He may do like based on what you hear about this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he may be like on the wing of the plane as it lands in Gainesville.
If indeed he's the guy, he is taking his time. You know, he's turned down jobs. There's other jobs he could have had he didn't want.
Could have had Auburn.
He could have had, right. Good point. That's not, with all due respect to Mississippi State.
All the other ones are sort of, that I kind of get.
Turned down Auburn.
Yeah. Like, if I was coaching Louisiana and Auburn offered, I'd be out the door.
And it was last year.
Alignment or no alignment.
When Brian Harsin doesn't like orange and blue, maybe we should be nervous.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But when Brian Harsin took, it could have been him. So anyway, interesting stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Because Auburn's not aligned properly.
Maybe it's at all. And Auburn has been aligned kind of funky as far as that goes. Well, again, Hayes did it with the closing argument yesterday. That's a big narrative these days. What it means is, do your boosters run the operation, or does the athletic department run the athletic department? And it's a good question. It's a fair question. So interesting stuff. So right, we'll talk about.
What
that.
Do you think? Where are you at?
I think Napier's the coach. I want him to be the coach. I want it to be Billy Napier. If Bob Stoops doesn't want it.
Okay.
And I assume that by now, if Bob Stoops wanted it, there's nothing holding that up.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to coach a game this week.
Yeah.
So I would think if there's anything with Bob Stoops at all, by now that would have been fleshed out. I heard from somebody yesterday, very close to him, very close to the circumstance, to the situation, that it's not completely dead, but that it's kind of close to almost completely dead. Right. And so, I don't know that I know that much about Billy Napier. What's happened with him is the narrative got out there that it's going to be him, so people want to be excited about him. Then the word comes out that he's a really good coach. He's been the last 2 years they've been lights out, 10-1 both years or whatever, something like that. Then the word gets out that he was under Saban and under Dabo, and he is. I think his profile has risen in the minds of Gator fans, kind of the way Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer was a good coach, and everybody wanted him. Notre Dame wanted him, and Florida wanted him. But once the word was out that Florida was getting him, he suddenly became Vince Lombardi. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
The minute – I mean, everyone thought he was a good candidate anyway, but when the word got out that it was probably going to be him, he became Vince Lombardi.
And you loved the fact that he chose Florida over Notre Dame.
Correct.
That added to his cachet immediately.
No question. So I think the whole Napier thing is growing a little bit. So we'll certainly talk about that today. Denny Thompson stops by at 2:20 to talk about quarterbacks and obviously Anthony Richardson. Where's his head now? And certainly we've got to ask that. I want to ask where Carson Beck's head is now. You know, Joey Gatewood. I think we're going to got to circle back with some of the Denny guys because none of the Denny guys are playing much football these days. You know, so, and that's not Denny's fault. He's done a great job teaching them. But I mean, I wonder, but I think they're all good prospects.
And
I think there's a chance all of them can, are there more moves in the offing, I guess.
Yeah. And what happens with Sims if like Jeff Collins doesn't make it out in Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Because isn't there some talk that maybe he's
going to get
thin
fired?
Ice?
Yeah.
I think is unfair.
Yeah. I do too. And I also think, so many coaches are getting fired. You have to be careful. You have to be careful when you do it.
Well, and he took over an operation that was running an offense from the Stone Age that he had to totally recruit away from. So, I mean, that to me should add in an extra year.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit. A Jaguar thought or two, and we got to get updated on who's back. Any injury update? They're off today, obviously. Any injury?
They're actually working.
Because of the holiday week?
They had availability today.
Okay.
But I would imagine they probably are pressing today. They're probably giving the players off on Thursday, I would think. But I don't know that there's – Urban didn't speak today, so I don't think there's any updates. But they may send out a injury report. I don't know. We'll have to see. It always confuses me. I think since they play Sunday, actually, they don't have to until Wednesday. So we may not get a whole lot of answers today in terms of who's going to be available or not. But they face some really – I mean, you were talking about dilemmas? Joe Collins is going to have trouble enjoying his Thanksgiving meal if he's not sure if he's going to have Shaq Griffin and Tyson Campbell this weekend.
Well, that's right. And hopefully the word is that they think they are going to have Tyson and Shaq's in the protocol, so you never know.
I will say this. There's been a couple of examples lately with concussions where the player was able to not miss a game. Zach Moss suffered a concussion against the Jaguars, played the next week.
Right.
Dallas Goedert suffered a concussion. The Eagles tight end did not miss a game, played the next week. So
it must be the level of grade of concussion.
But usually, because of the protocol, they have to be at least limited Wednesday. Like that, so if you don't see Shaq do anything on Wednesday, I think that makes it really tough to be available because so many of the protocols are like, well, you have to wait 24 hours, right. So hopefully Shaq can do something on Wednesday, you know, and be ready for Atlanta.
Urban meets with the media at 3:45 today, so there could be some updates, but like you said, that may not really be known until later this week, and then we'll hear from him again on Friday.
Yeah, okay, so and that will give us an idea. So they are practicing, our buddy Mark Long checked in. Thank you, Mark, that they are practicing. And again, like you said, Lauren, Urban speaks today. So we'll get to that. And my Jaguar thought is this today. Hayes, is there in the mind of the Jaguar fan, is there an importance to winning this game? Because if you don't get this one, in light of the Texans suddenly playing a really good game last week, Tyrod Taylor playing pretty well, and I guess you got the Jets around the corner, but we fluctuate in our mind, winnable game, losable game, win a hard game, easy game, and it never plays out that way. If you had told me before the season you're going to get rolled by the Texans and then beat the Bills, we would have thought that. But I sense for the first time, and I hope this doesn't happen because I think in fairness to these guys, they're all kind of new at it. Urban's new at the league. Trevor's new at the league. But I sense there was it was a despondent fan base a little bit after this week's game, more so than before.
A lot of venom.
Yeah, it's venom and not sure where they are. Is this game suddenly very important on all those fronts for those reasons?
I think so. I mean,
because this is the team it looks like the Jags could beat.
Right. How often does Vegas have the Jaguars as a favorite?
Correct.
I mean, not often.
You said it way more succinctly than I did. That's exactly
right. Yeah, and it may just be a one-point favorite, or it may move to Atlanta, but it basically Vegas is telling you this is a game that the Jaguars absolutely have a great chance to win.
Right.
And you see how poorly the Falcons have played over the last two games. It's in Jacksonville. And Atlanta has a first-year head coach as well, so you're not, you know, it's not like Urban's going up against, you know, a veteran coach like last week in Shanahan. So there's a lot of reasons why. If this game ends up being 24-6 Atlanta, there will be major, major problems here.
Yeah, I think the fan base as a whole used the word despondent. It'll go to dejection. And I think there will be a lot of questions about who's getting fired and when.
Yeah.
You saw today that the Giants let go their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, the former Cowboys head coach. People are, that's what happens when you lose to bad teams. And considering this is a bad team still, they're at home. They're going to expect to win. When you lose to bad teams, people want other people fired.
Yeah. So this is kind of the game. This is the one. I thought the Texans would be the one, and maybe that one will when it comes around because it's here also. But this is the one. People saw how badly the Falcons have played, how slowly this thing has gotten going under Arthur Smith. Is their quarterback over the hill? Kyle Pitts hasn't really been what everything they thought. Yeah, this is suddenly an important game. It's an important game. Neither team's headed to the playoffs, but it's suddenly an important game for the emotional self-esteem of the Jaguar fan.
I think if you lose this game, you can start having a legitimate conversation on, are they going to get the number one pick again?
Yeah.
I mean, because... Yeah.
That's right. I agree with you.
It wouldn't be shocking if the Lions may win Thursday. And they've already tied once.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're,
if not the number one pick, does it certainly look like they're headed for the top three or four pick?
Well, they're there now. They're there. I think they're third now.
Right, but that's what I'm
saying. So if they lose to Atlanta,
but that's what I'm saying. Are they? Yeah. But there's a long. There's a lot of season left. But does that top two or three look more real now? So we'll talk about.
It does. By the way, the Lions are playing a team that apparently is going to fire their coach right after the game.
Yeah.
The Bears.
Yeah. How about that?
And if the Lions get that win, they're one win, one tie.
Yeah. That'll be.
So they'd still be in. But again, they could win again.
It was interesting. Matt Nagy asked about that. Said, no, that's not correct. That's bad information. Usually a coach would say, I'm just going to worry about my team. I can't control what I can't control. But he didn't say that. He said it's bad information. So I'll be interested to see what really happens. All right, a lot of things to get to. Denny Thompson stops by. Let's talk about all these quarterbacks, where they may wind up, and how the Florida situation will affect Anthony Richardson. That's a question a lot of people have. We'll see if Denny knows the answer. That's next. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, the quarterback whisperer. Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Brought to you by Zero Res and Honest Abe Roofing.
This is a good song to bring Denny in with, you think?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think we all know this one, right?
We do.
Well, you know, I've never seen him.
I do know, but I love that Denny doesn't know who this is.
I have no idea what this is.
Steve Miller Band.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Jet Airliner.
How you doing over there?
I'm
good.
Right?
You're all right.
I'm
good. You look flat today. You flat?
No, I'm thinking about flat. I'm thinking about if I want to enter litigation or not with 1010 over this quarterback whisperer thing, because three different occasions today somebody's walked up to me and called me the quarterback whisperer, and I don't remember approving this in any way, shape, or form.
Oh. Hey,
take it as a compliment, Denny.
All right. Let's get right to it. Everybody and their brother wants to know what's going to happen with this Anthony Richardson thing. What do you do in this, Denny? Do you wait to see who the new coach is? I mean, I guess we are all dying to know who the new Florida coach is.
Mm-hmm.
That poor kid's got to really be one. And Emory, too, running to know. So how do you play this if you're a guy like that?
Yeah.
And specifically that guy?
Yeah, well, there's so many different angles to it, too, is now with name, image, likeness. This is a business decision.
Yeah.
Especially for a guy like Anthony who's from Gainesville. And so in a perfect world, and I've talked to him about this, in a perfect world, they hire a guy that fits what he does really well, and you stay. And, you know, that's your dream school. That's where you're from. People like you. And so you don't go start over somewhere else. But if it were to happen to where they bring a coach in that doesn't fit his style, then that also becomes a business decision. And the business on Sundays is much bigger than this little name, image, likeness stuff. And you've got to get Sundays if you've got that skill set. But, you know, I all you can do right now is wait. And I think that I told him this, I don't think Emery's decision is any of Anthony's business. I think at the end of the day, what Emery does is completely irrelevant to Anthony in the sense of if you're as good as we all think you are, that shouldn't affect you. Whether Emery stays or goes, if somebody comes in with a clean slate and you're as good as we all think you are, you should win that job and you should win it convincingly, whether five is there or not. So I think it's all about the system, all about the fit right now.
Let me ask you this, because I view Anthony as a player that would almost be a perfect fit for whatever offense you wanted to put him in because of his versatile skill set. But what would be best, and is what would be the system where it would be like, well, maybe this doesn't work for him.
He's a smart guy, so you're right. He could pick up anything, but at this point, he's entering his third year out of high school, so he becomes draft eligible next year. Right. So what system is it that he plugs into that he doesn't have to learn a whole bunch of new skill sets, right, and a whole bunch of new terminology and read keys and all that kind of stuff? But you're right. I mean, you could literally put Anthony in a pro style under center offense, give him an offseason. He would learn it. He would be fine. He's a smart guy. You know, if the rumors are true and it is Billy Napier, I mean, that's about as perfect of a system for Anthony Richardson as you can come across.
Why?
I watched a ton. I didn't know anything at all about him. And so I watched a bunch. Any film I could get my hands on, I watched the last 2 days. I love what he does offensively. He keeps it simple. There's a lot of motions, a lot of shifts, a ton of motions, in fact, which helps the quarterback a ton. But the biggest thing that I saw is it's quick reads, and he doesn't mind his quarterback tucking it. He doesn't mind. It's almost like he coaches his quarterbacks on this concept, here's your exit lane. Here's where you're going to go. And you can see it in the style of play. His offenses are really loose. They're up-tempo. They're fast. They're efficient, super efficient. And I think it just fits what Anthony does perfectly.
What do you think the play calling is going to look like on Saturday for Florida against Florida State?
I have no clue. It almost makes this game fun.
It does. I agree with that.
It's like, what? So, who's calling? What are they calling? What are they calling?
Okay, you're the bottle cap.
Right.
You're the matchstick.
Right.
Right. Right. I mean, and the other thing is, like, if you're Emory Jones, you got to love this, because if you get up to the line of scrimmage and you don't like it, check out of it, my man.
Right.
Like, check. What do you like? Check out of it. What's the worst that can happen? It's the last game with a coach who's not going to be your head coach. Let's go out and let it hang out and have fun.
Danny, we were all growing up. You had to do that. I'm sure when you were growing up too, it was do a down and out, take a left at the tree.
That's right. Right. That's
remember,
right.
Remember left at the tree, take it down and out.
And you even at that age, it was like, hey, that guy's better than that guy.
That's
we're
right.
going to throw to him.
That's right.
And that's football still like that.
So I'm going to go back to the Napier thing for a minute. You watched a lot of his tape. Did you watch any tape with multiple quarterbacks, like past quarterbacks, or just this year's?
Just this year.
Because I wonder. Because I wonder too, and everyone's spread. I mean, but you're filling in. A lot of people are listening right now that don't know the answer to what you're giving us. They play fast. Tennessee fast?
No,
nobody, because nobody does that, right?
No, because they're gonna get their personnel grouping. They're gonna leave that personnel. From what I can see, they're gonna leave that personnel grouping so you don't have time to sub that fast.
That's a Tennessee Ole Miss thing. They run the ball to the official.
That's right.
They don't sub right. They don't
right.
substitute.
They don't sub. But the thing that he does, that Billy Napier seems to like to do, is regardless of the formation he starts in, he's ending in a different one. And so he can come out. I think they were playing the I have to remember the game, but there must have been something he saw against this defense, because I think it was like 12 consecutive plays I counted, he came out in 2x2 and motioned to trips left.
Okay.
And it was like, at some point you're going, well, why don't they just line up in trips left? But there's something that motion was triggering that they took advantage of, and they ran to the trip side over and over and over again until they stopped it. And it was like, okay, they studied that, because they started the game off like this. They studied that. It was part of the game plan, and there was a reason he was doing it, right? It wasn't just to get the quarterback. I don't know if they outflanked him. I don't know what it was. But when you see things like that, it's, okay, I've got an offense that the base of it is consistent, but we can play around with a bunch of stuff on it to make it work against whatever opponent. It's kind of the old-school wing tee. I can motion, and it can be like a sleight of hand, and I can gain an advantage over you. And that's what he's doing. They know their offense really well.
Is it like 10 personnel? Is there no tight end?
It was 10 personnel in this particular game.
Well, 10 personnel means, by the way, is a running back and 4 wide, no tight end. So they had no tight end.
Yeah, they were 2x2. They had motion to the inside trips guy. Like, that's who would go in motion. And then right when that guy hit the line, ball's out. And they didn't substitute the entire series.
Yeah.
So there was it just lets you know he had a plan going into that.
Because that's how I mean, people still use 11, because there's still sometimes it's a tight end and the 3 wide receivers. But that's how everybody plays, regardless of whether you're 10 or 11.
That's right.
Everyone plays like that, which you just described. Play fast. And I like that whole Tennessee and Ole Miss. They don't substitute, and the guy that catches that ball runs it to the umpire.
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice? I mean, they run it to the umpire and line up.
I got the sense this was more, and I'm not – don't take the wrong way, I'm not saying the style offense. The pacing was more what Gus Malzahn used to do. It's fast enough where I'm not going to let you substitute, but it's slow enough where we can get a read on what you're going to do.
Yeah, a lot of teams, Danny, and you can explain this better than I can, line up really fast.
Yep.
But don't snap
it. And that's more what this is. They'll line up, they'll snap it within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's not Ole Miss, line up, snap it as soon as the ball's
down.
Yeah. Right.
I'm curious because you talk to so many young players, and obviously we know a big component of this next Florida coach is recruiting at a much higher level than Dan Mullen did. Have you heard anything from whether it's kids that you train or coaches that you talk to? Have you ever heard anything about Billy Napier when it comes to personality and recruiting ability?
I have never heard Billy Napier's name mentioned by a kid. And honestly, I'd never heard it mentioned by a coach until I started asking a couple guys this week. And it's a great reputation in the coaching community. I mean, great reputation. Very detail-oriented guy. Everybody I've talked to, he's one of these chart every single play in practice guys. Like himself, not a GA. And super attention to the details. And apparently everybody likes him.
High school playoffs are going on. Who are some guys that people should keep their eye on as far as quarterbacks?
The Nice quarterback, Marcus Stokes, is so much fun. He's a high school version of Johnny Manziel. Makes throw after throw after throw that you're just like, wow, that was awesome. And they're playing really good ball at Nice. He's a lot of fun to watch. And, of course, you know, Colin Hurley's still in it at Trinity. He's just, you know, steady. And he's the most mature freshman I've ever seen, and I'm sure I'm missing a lot, but I'm really focused on Marcus right now because Colin Drafts has done a great job with that program at Nice, and he's playing a kind of football that if you want to go watch a game, they're going to be playing games we have to drive, but it's a lot of fun to watch. And by the way, that's a 6 points matchup. Their quarterback at Buchholz is one of our guys, Mark Whittemore's kid, Creed, fantastic as well. Holds an offer from Florida, I think, not as a quarterback, but as an athlete. But it'd be a lot of fun to watch.
Give me an update on all the ones we know about. Give me a Carson Beck, Joey Gatewood, obviously Anthony, Jeff Sims, even though he's the starter now, which everything should be status quo there. But give me an update on this.
Jeff actually hadn't played the last 2 weeks. He's hurt.
Okay.
He's been hurt. He's been dealing with some turf toe issues. Thought he was going to be able to go last week, wasn't able to go, which really stinks because he found his groove midway through the year, played some really good football. Got hurt first quarter of the Miami game, had to sit in the pocket and throw, which just isn't his deal.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's playing this week. Carson has had kind of a rebirth at Georgia. Like, I mean, it's a roller coaster at Georgia.
Okay, so what does that position. Mean?
He's phenomenal right now in practice. Everything I'm hearing is like, wow, this kid. And so I think Carson's the one this offseason that's going to be really interesting because – spring practice, you know, Stetson coming back, probably not. He could petition for the COVID year. I doubt he does. What is JT? Nobody really knows what JT is. So it's probably going to be a battle between JT and Carson in the spring.
You think JT's going to stay?
I don't know.
What do you think, Hayes?
I wouldn't think.
I think.
You think he's going to NFL?
Well, I would think he's going to do something. I'll bet he's pissed.
I would imagine.
I'll bet he is just beyond. I don't know the kid, but I would bet JT Daniels is just. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say anything because this guy's about to lead you a national title. He's playing very well, but I got to believe he's seething.
Yeah. So I think Carson's kind of caught. Not that he was ever bad, but he's just kind of caught a second leadership win type of deal. Like, all right, let's go. Yeah. This could be my team next year.
What's Joey Gatewood doing? I don't hear anything about him.
Yeah, he's It's been a rough year for Joey. A lot of things. Just. A lot of you know, personal things. And so he's down at UCF, you know, still learning the offense. They had, you know, Dylan went down, and so they had a young kid that they went with.
Right.
And I talk to Joey pretty regularly, and, you know, it's just, you know, right now, unfortunately, the conversation, the focus isn't football. Right.
Final thing before we let you go. With Trevor, there's fear that he's playing worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that feels unfair to me. The guy just got to the league on a team that wasn't very good, that doesn't have a very good receiving core. It bothers me when people seem to be pointing the finger at him. It bothers me. Having said that, I get it. He's probably not playing as well. He looks tentative. He looks like to me, and certainly to Jeff and Tony, who know football way better than I ever will, that he's kind of afraid to throw people open, that he's waiting an extra count to make sure they're open. And in that league, Denny, that's the kiss of death. What do you see when you watch Trevor Lawrence?
General dysfunction offensively everywhere.
Right, not just
the
quarterback.
Not just the quarterback, which leads to second-guessing yourself, the play call, everything. the concept, the guys you're throwing to, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the one thing about that Trevor, it hit me this week. I need to see more dog out of him. Meaning, like, at some point, you watch Mac Jones, and I'm not comparing the two, but what makes Mac so great, it doesn't matter what you say, what I say, what anybody says, Mac is just going to win football games. He doesn't care how he does it. He doesn't care how it looks. He just has this it about him that he makes everybody better the minute he walks up. We got to see that out of Trevor, because if you look at this, LaVisca's underperforming from what we all thought he would. You've got Marvin Jones. I mean, I think he could be better, right? He should be better. They didn't target Dan Arnold. On some level, the guy, 16, has to take that over, and 16 has to elevate everybody's game. Now, that can't happen if there's utter dysfunction. I get it, and I'm not putting it on him. But if you want to be that guy, you got to be that guy, good or bad. Right, it can't be just when you're winning football games. It's like, I just want to see a game where he says, you know what, forget all this. I'm going downfield with the ball. Your guys are going to make plays. We're going to keep shooting. I don't care if I throw four picks doing it. We're going down the freaking field. And we haven't seen that since week three, really. And it's almost like you get the sense that he's so scared to make a mistake right now that he's waiting and waiting and waiting. And I just want to see him let it rip. What do you have to lose right now?
I think it's a great point. Absolute great point. And I think you're right, because the picks became such a storyline, and he hasn't thrown many.
Mm-hmm.
But there also isn't any real production to hang your hat
and
on.
And this isn't who he is. You did not draft Trevor Lawrence to be conservative.
Right.
Now, you may have the personnel that forces that, but that's not what you brought him in for. Let him be who he is and who you drafted, and let him make his mistakes.
Danny Thompson, Talking Quarterbacks. Great work as always. Thanks, bro. We appreciate it.
Hey, real quick. Yep. Real quick.
Yes.
Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
And to you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Y'all's houses are not as clean as mine, though.
Yeah. Tell me why.
Zero res. Yeah. I can't. I mean, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And it's a shame if you got people coming over to a dirty house.
Yeah.
You should have called zero res. You should have listened to
you're
me.
You're in the new house.
I'm in the new house. It is so clean. I would invite y'all over, and y'all would eat off the floors that are freshly steamed.
Well, like,
it is absolutely beautiful.
Thanks to our friends at Zero Res also for sponsoring the Denny's Report. Back in a moment with Greg McGarrity from the Gator Bowl. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program, along with Hayes Carlion, Lauren Brooks, and Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frange. Greg McGarrity joins us now, the executive director of the Gator Bowl. Quiet times in college football. Not much going on, I guess, huh?
Yeah, just a lazy day. Nothing going on. It's the silly season. Started early this year.
Yeah, it did. Okay, when you're an AD and the coaching search is going on, and people have flight trackers and all this stuff, do you? How do you handle that? Do you not worry about it? Do you try and throw them off course? What do you do?
Well, you bunker down.
Yeah.
I remember after we made our decision that I just went to the Atlanta to the Renaissance and bunkered in with Bill Carr, who helped us with the search, and Carla Williams, who was there, and we just bunkered in and didn't really listen to any noise in the system, and really just blocked everything out. I told Cheryl she needed to get out. I wasn't going to be around the house anyway.
Right.
You just need to leave because it's not going to be pretty,
right.
I won't be around, but yeah, you just try to just focus fully on that. 100% of your efforts are focused on making a decision as soon as you can.
Do you get caught up in – there wasn't social as much then, but social, internet, message boards, do you block all that out? Do you get calls from boosters during it? How does that work?
Yeah, you just basically check out.
Okay.
And
Don't look at your emails?
No. I mean, there's a – the people that know how to get in touch with you have – their cell phone number, the ones that really need to get in touch with you.
Right.
But you just can't pay any attention to that. The worst thing you can do is pay attention to it. You saw what happened in the Tennessee search.
Yeah, that's right.
It just bombed that. So if you pay attention to that, you're going to lose focus, and you just need to stick to your guns during that time.
What do you know about Billy Napier?
I don't know. I really hadn't had to worry about that space.
I think what Greg said, I think what he said, let me answer for him. He's saying, not my problem.
Yeah.
That is what he's saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so difficult because really, you know, you really don't really know these coaches. I mean, you do your research on them. You probably haven't talked with any of them. And you're having to make a decision based on maybe some references, friends of yours in the profession. How do they treat their staff at certain areas? How do they deal with adversity? Are they a true leader? And so you really don't know, and it's kind of a crapshoot. And so I remember when Justin Fuentes was hired at Virginia Tech, I went back and read the comments that they made when he was hired, and you would think the guy can't miss.
Right.
It's just a roll of the dice, and you've got to be very lucky, but you've got to make the right decision because it's so impactful football is to every institution.
How do the contract negotiations go?
Well, that's really kind of after the fact. In other words, you want to find somebody that, first of all, wants to be there, that you don't have to convince to come. I've always felt if you have to convince somebody to come, they're coming for the wrong reason. It needs to almost be, I want that job. And okay. We'll worry about that other stuff later, because if they're worried about a lot of the material things in there, the financial piece of it, they're taking it for the wrong reason. If somebody's taking that job just for money, you got the wrong guy.
That's a great – because I wanted the same thing Lauren did. So an extension of that, even when you're procuring, trying to find the coach, do you talk to Jimmy Sexton? Do you call the coach himself? Let's say you were Scott Strickland right now, and you had two guys you had in mind. What's the first thing? Call the agent? What's the first? Do you call his current school to ask if you can talk? What's the process?
Well, if it's the head coach, you call the AD at that school and say, I'd like to have permission to talk to so-and-so.
Okay. And
probably doesn't happen a lot.
But would Scott make that call him? Would Scott call – let's say it's Napier, the Louisiana AD, whoever that is. Would Scott call him?
Absolutely.
That's how that would work?
Absolutely.
Ask permission. That's not search firm and agent. That's guy calling guy.
There's a lot of undercurrent. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
There's ways to handle it, and there are other ways to handle
it.
So a lot of this runs undercurrent, but – you know, if it's Jimmy Sexton, for instance, he's going to have all the data to present to you for consideration of things like that. So I'm sure if it's Jimmy Sexton, you're having communication with probably Jimmy at this time just to see what the dollars are, what are the demands, what are they expecting, what is a school willing to do, because really coaches, they're focused on this last week of the season and perhaps a bowl game. So they're trying to multitask, but if they lose focus this week of the game, you know, I would really be worried about that as an AD, as far as is that coach that may be entertaining going somewhere else totally focused on our team where he's currently employed.
And you told us this in the last couple of weeks. I want to ask you to retell the story, but it was fascinating. You called Nick. Nick, I want to talk to Kirby. And then it was you and Kirby. There weren't search firms and agents and this guy and that guy. I mean, you kind of took that out of it, right?
Right. Well, Jimmy was in the room when we met after the SEC championship game
to
represent Kirby. So that's how that takes
place. Who's in the room? Just the three of you?
Well, it was me. It was Bill Carr. It was Jimmy.
Because Bill Carr had
Bill Carr was our consultant.
Okay. And for people that don't know, by the way, Bill Carr is an old Florida AD. Florida was the center when Spurrier was a quarterback. Was the AD and then went into the search firm business.
And so we sat down in the room and obviously interviewed Kirby for a long time. And the biggest interview, though, for Kirby was the next morning with the president of the university.
Okay.
So if that had gone wrong, and maybe the president and he were not aligned, I don't know what would have happened.
So based on that, even if Scott Strickland and Billy Napier come to all kind of agreements, Napier's got to get in front of President Fox before anything else happens.
Should.
Interesting.
Because the ultimate CEO of an institution is the president or chancellor. Absolutely.
What kind of questions do you ask? I mean, how do you set up your interview and the information that you're trying to gather?
Well, you want that person to talk about strengths and weaknesses. You want to really see how he articulates vision. Ask how he would deal with complex situations, and really challenge thought, and try to find out really what the capabilities are as a person. Not too many hypotheticals, but I would say that there's certain markers up there because you kind of forget wins and losses and the records at that meeting because you've already dealt with – I mean, you're past that point.
Right.
You want to find out what makes this person tick. What are they expecting from the athletic director? Because if you're misaligned in the beginning, well, I thought you said you were going to do this and you said you were going to give me all these facilities and it doesn't work, you know, that's frustrating. I think it may be part of the reason Jimbo left FSU was because of the development of College Town.
Right.
Was that's where the Seminole Booster money was going instead of to maybe athletic facilities.
For people that don't know, for people that haven't been to Tallahassee, they developed, for lack of a better phrase, a civilian village where fans can hang out. It's an amazing place. but it didn't go into doing an indoor facility.
That's correct.
It didn't go into football. It went into that, and that is a big part of Jimbo. So I know more people prominent among the Seminole boosters, which is a big group, that said that was the final straw with him.
You said people have to mention their weaknesses. In every interview training that anyone's ever gone through before going into an interview for a job, it was always, when you mention your weaknesses, make sure they sound like strengths. Like, one of my weaknesses, I just spend too much time at work, and I'm just too detail oriented for my own good. Yeah. Did you ever come across that?
Yeah, what's your problem? I'm too nice to people. Are you
right
now?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I'm too committed to they the always job.
Said
are
that.
You now?
Turn. Make sure they're not real weaknesses.
It just, you have a gut feeling about things. If people are sincere, you know it. If they're a little ego, if they have a big ego, you can tell right away. How many times have they used the word me as opposed to we or us? Little indicators there that tell you that I might be able to work with this person because you're joined at the hip. You are joined at the hip. And if you don't enjoy your time with this person, it'd be miserable.
Yeah, I would think, I'm going to get to the Gator Bowl, but I would think the reality, and you're always really straight with us, this is a really important hire for Scott Strickland. If this one goes bad, it's going to be bad, right? I mean, that's the reality.
Well, judgment enters the picture, and then presidents, you're part of the cabinet, and it is so critical.
Yeah.
And you've got to get it right, and you've got to be really lucky, but you've got to take certain things into play that cause you to make decisions of this magnitude.
Let's talk about the Gator Bowl. All right, what are we down to? We got a week left. Who's coming to the Gator Bowl?
Well, the ACC will know a lot next week because NC State plays North Carolina Friday.
Okay.
Clemson, South Carolina. You've got Wake Forest that could clinch at BC.
Okay.
Pittsburgh's already in. So you're looking at maybe those teams and maybe some 7-win teams that could emerge. A lot of 6-6 teams now. If they emerge to 7-6, and if NC State and Clemson lose, that might cause the pool to grow. In the SEC, a lot depends on the Egg Bowl. That is a huge game.
How so?
Because if Mississippi State beats Ole Miss, they really drop out of the New Year's Day Six Bowls.
Okay.
I don't know if it advances Mississippi State up there, but it sure pushes A&M. And then if Alabama goes up and finishes in the top four, then the SEC would populate the Sugar Bowl, which would be probably Texas A&M at that time. If Alabama doesn't populate, then they fall to the Sugar Bowl, so the SEC would only have two teams up, which would shift more teams down to our level as opposed to New Year's Day 6. So you've got Arkansas with a huge game against Missouri. You've got Clemson, South Carolina. South Carolina going for 7 wins. Tennessee against Vanderbilt, they'll probably have 7 wins. Mississippi State could be 7-5, or if they win at home, 8-4, only one game behind Ole Miss.
Is it safe to say that Florida and Florida State are now both out of the Gator Bowl picture?
I think so. It's 6-6 because of the number of teams that have a better record. And I know in the ACC there's language that protects that from teams jumping others.
Okay.
SEC is a little bit more fluid, but I do think that that would be pretty tough sell there.
It'd be hard. So the FSU Florida winner is out of the bowl picture, and the FSU Florida winner is the FSU loser is out of the bowl picture.
Correct.
The winner is going to go to a bowl, but in your opinion, nothing's definite. But you think in all likelihood probably not here.
Well, what happens is the ADs of the schools that are not playing up, they get to select where they want to go, and trust me, Jacksonville is either one or two on that list. Okay.
Right.
It's not going to be below Memphis. It's not going to be below Charlotte. It's not going to be below Houston. It's not going to be below Nashville. With all due respect to those bowls, everybody wants to come to Florida. Playing an NFL stadium, playing in a great environment, great hotels, great food, hopefully great weather on 11 o'clock that morning.
Yeah, right.
But really, the Florida bowls really attract, I think, those teams. So I'm not sure that Florida would be in a position to bump someone else out that's got head-to-head wins or better records.
Yeah, getting back to Florida real quick, we heard Scott Strickland. When you're an athletic director and you're at that press conference, you're going to get the question about selling your job, and it's your opportunity to sort of make your pitch publicly about how you're going to appeal to the candidates that you go after. And Scott Strickland used the word alignment. How big of a watchword has that become in collegiate athletics, major football over the last five or so years?
It is essential. I mean, from president to athletic director to head football coach, you have to all be on the same page. Because if you're not, you could imagine the issues that could arise. You could have a president that said, I'm not going to pay that amount of money to an offensive line coach or what have you. So you have to have you have to have that alignment, because if you don't, then all of a sudden you're going to lose a level of trust there. And that is so critical. And I've seen it where it hadn't existed, and it's just been a failure. So Scott was point on as far as that, to where boosters really aren't involved with decision-making. And you need to just be clear, focused, because he has one person to satisfy, and that's the president at the University of Florida.
I see Wake Forest Auburn as far as bowl projection.
Did they call you?
Auburn 6-6, maybe. I think they'll be in the same boat if Florida were 6-6. Yeah. They really struggled the last two games, and so
they must not have called Greg.
I'm not so sure that
so.
That's in the works right now.
So give me a guess. If I asked you to guess two teams from each league that could be in play, and I know you're not held to anything. You're guessing.
Gosh, I mean, just if the season ended today,
yeah, okay.
You know, probably in our pool, you'd have Tennessee, Mississippi State, Arkansas.
Okay. That gives me an idea.
On the other side, it's those three schools that I mentioned, or four, depending on who lose the championship. But, again, that could change with an upset loss. But if things move as they – without any upsets, it becomes more clear. But, boy, you throw a curveball on there with an upset, South Carolina beating Clemson.
Right.
It's a huge game.
Was Tennessee last year? Or 2 years ago? No, two years ago.
2 years ago against Indiana. Last year was Kentucky and NC State.
Because I would tell you.
Tennessee-Clemson?
Tennessee-Clemson. Or Tennessee-North Carolina. Tennessee with a brand. Because Tennessee's fun, man.
They
play fast. Ooh, that'd be fun.
And they'll probably end up their favorite over Vandy.
Yes, they're probably going to win.
So you just don't know. That's the neat thing about it. But there'll be a lot more clarity next week. I think by the SEC championship game, you'll have some scenarios. If A happens, then B happens. If C and D.
Greg McGarrity from the Gator Bowl. Great work. Thanks, man.
Thanks. My pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Back in a moment on 10 Tennessee Hill 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Frangie Show. Always a Nim-Nick Tuesday around here. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Andrew Gibson, I'm Lauren Brooks. We've talked a ton of Billy Napier today. One name we haven't mentioned yet, Andrew Gibson, would be Wander Franco. As a Rays fan, obviously, I knew that they were in the works of a long-term deal. Had no idea what the numbers would end up being. But my goodness, if the reports are true, 12-year deal that guarantees him around $185 million. It's worth up to $223 million. I know he's only played in 70 games, but I say this was absolutely well done. He is a very mature, even though he's young, he's a very mature 20-year-old, and he can just absolutely hit the lights out of that baseball.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Wander Franco being a type, generational type of player, and you see the production that he's had already at 20 years old. I was talking to a friend of mine that's an agent in baseball, and we were talking about this deal, and he said that he thought that Franco should have waited a little bit longer because he thinks that he could have gotten maybe a better deal down the road. So now he'll be a free agent at 32 with a 12-year deal. So that's interesting, a part of it where he thinks that if he could have waited a little bit longer, he may have gotten more money down the road. But it's hard to say no to that kind of money when you're 20 years old.
It is, because, I mean, you can get injured at any point in time. Frank, to me, this cements the Rays as certainly an organization that, while they haven't spent a lot of money in the past, this is a guy that they decided they had to lock up.
Yeah, there's no question. You want to read a tweet? Want to hear a tweet I just read about that?
Sure.
This is a great day for Montreal baseball and ex-Rays star Wander Franco. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
He does not have a no-trade clause, so he could get traded.
You know what? It really.
Frank's obviously jokingly saying Montreal because a lot of people don't think that, the Rays will stay in Tampa forever.
Maybe Nashville? Portland? How about the Charlotte Rays?
How about Jacksonville?
They'll all draw better.
This, by the way, is a gigantic move for baseball, because they are, by doing this, the Rays are now calling out all the other small dollar teams. That's the beauty of this. By doing this, by guaranteeing him, it's 12 years, $185 minimum.
Right.
It could be $223 million basically, if in incentive clauses. They are now calling out Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Seattle, Cincinnati. Pick your small dollar team.
Cleveland.
They're calling them out now. They're saying, okay, no more excuses. You know, we draw nothing.
Right.
We do not have a particularly good TV deal, which they don't. You know, Sternberg's a rich guy, but he's no richer than the other owners. Okay. So, I mean, nobody, I'm even told the sponsorship deals aren't very good. That all the sponsorship, not just fans, but all the sponsorship money in Tampa goes to the Bucks and the Lightning. So there's
that
not,
wouldn't surprise me.
There's not even a lot of sponsorship money. Nobody goes to the games. There's not much sponsorship money. Their TV deal is not great, and they just spent $185 million. They've called out baseball now. They've called out all these other cheap ass teams like mine, and they've said, you can do this. You know, change your cash flow model, change your P&L. It's a great day for baseball because of the effect it should have on all these other small market teams or small dollar teams.
Yeah, no question. I like the approach too. If you have a young star, go ahead and lock them up. I liked it when Atlanta did it with Acuna, and
they got an incredible deal for him.
Incredible deal.
8 years, $100 million.
Yeah, you know the Jaguars steal. Did this once upon a time because they extended MJD well before they had to, mm-hmm. and it ended up being one of the more brilliant front office moves that they've made ever. Because he outperformed that extension. And so, yeah, I think what they've done is, it just shows that that they're excelling in all areas of running a baseball club.
Yeah, I think it's a great day for baseball. And again, by the way, your move, other teams, right?
Yes.
Right, Gibby? I mean, your move, Cincinnati, with I'm drawing a blank, Nick, blah, 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 blah. Right fielder, Castellanos.
Yeah, Nick Castellanos.
Your move now, okay? I mean, because Castellanos is a free agent, right? Gibby, pay him and keep him, right?
Well,
pay him and keep him.
And if you look at, I'm looking right now at the payroll for next year, and again, free agency, a lot of stuff still has to happen before they play again, fingers crossed. The Baltimore Orioles payroll next year is $19 million.
Yeah, and they won't play at 19.
Right, but it just tells you right now, they've stripped it down.
And I don't know who they should pay, Mancini. I don't know who their guys are.
Well, that's the other part, too. The Rays had a guy to pay. I mean, they had a really good, we throw the term generational around, but Wander Franco's an incredible player at 20 years old. A lot of teams don't have that type of guy to pay, but you're right. The guys that you do have, you need to pay them.
You need to pay the one. Yeah, you don't pay just when you – there's not any other Wander Francos. I can tell you this. The Pirates have a guy, Brian Reynolds, who's their center fielder. 300 hitter, hit 20 some odd home runs, knocked in 100 runs. One of the better center fielders in baseball. Who knows what Brian Reynolds made last year? $25 an hour. I mean, he was probably the guy at Target makes more money than Brian Reynolds made last year. So they need to pay Brian Reynolds. You know, so Castellanos and the Reds need to pay him. You need to, when you have a guy that's pretty good, pay him. And again now. The answer is, well, the Rays wouldn't have done it either if they didn't have a guy that was that good. This guy might be the best player in baseball by 2 years, you know.
I said I think he'll win the MVP right after Randy Arozarena won it 2 years in a row.
But yeah, well, I think Arozarena is going to win Rookie of the Year next year. Okay, he's my bet for Rookie of the Year next year. I think he's going to want a 3 year run.
Here's something else. Hey, Braves, about time to sign Freddie Freeman. We're waiting for that deal to happen. It hasn't happened yet.
The off of baseball, by the way, we'll get back.
And the longer that goes,
I
think the lower the percentage that he stays.
I do too.
Agreed.
I would, and I don't care what you say. His off season, I think he wants to be on the Braves, but his off season home where he spends his time is California. Lots of teams out there spend a lot of money. I'm just telling you. I mean, I mean, Brandon Belt doesn't have much left. Eric Hosmer, he's the first baseman in San Francisco. Eric Hosmer was a disaster in San Diego. And by the way, one other thing, I'm 99.99999% sure that if we have baseball next year, we're going to have a nationally designated hitter.
Yep.
So that enhances guys like that.
Absolutely.
So we'll see. You guys watched the Gator basketball all last night?
A little bit.
Did you watch
flipping
it?
Back and forth.
Okay. And I didn't watch it because it wasn't on TV, but FSU played Missouri here in town. Missouri's got a pretty good program.
They do.
FSU absolutely boat raced them.
Yeah.
And Florida absolutely boat raced Cal. How funny is this? That the two football teams in this state, one of them's missing a bowl, the other's going to get in the worst bowl in America, and the two basketball teams might go deep into March. Think about that for a second. Because that Florida team's pretty good. You don't want to play them. That Florida team is really, like Bill Raftery had the best comment last night. He goes, wouldn't you love to just see a practice? I mean, the practices have to be bloody. I mean, they defend, man. They are They defend.
And they hustle.
They hustle. They're tough. They're in your face. They're in passing lanes. When has Florida had that? You know, I mean, think about that.
It's been a soft team since the Elite Eight run, really. Since they got to the Elite Eight, it's been a team that's immature and kind of soft.
And even the Elite Eight team was a very good team. It wasn't a tough team. The 14 team, the Final Four team, was a tough team.
Oh, yeah.
The team with Devin Robinson and Kayvon and Chiozza was a really good team.
I think they were pretty tough.
But they weren't that kind of. They weren't like 14 tough. You know, they were. You know what I mean? They had some tough guys. I guess when Egbunu got hurt, they were less tough. But this team is, I mean, this, I don't know how good this is. It's only been three games. But, boy, these guys, I mean, they are in your face, man.
And if Anthony DiRuggi hits a three, I'm going to say Florida wins every game that he hits a three with.
And Felder made two of them last night. Yeah. He made one.
Jatobo had points.
It'll be interesting because Ohio State and Seton Hall are both good. And they played that first game was a heck of a game. Ohio State won it at the end with a three. And they play Ohio State, who's pretty good. That'll be the best team they've played so far. Well, I say that. They played FSU, but it'll be one of the better teams they've played so far. So, but I'm telling you, I got up from that game thought, man, they're pretty good. I mean, they're like legitimately good.
Be really tough to beat at home with the way they defend and what the crowd, the rowdies will give them.
Yes.
And the SEC is loaded, but it'll be fun to see what Florida can do.
They're not like the Duke teams or the Kentucky teams because those teams have the five stars. They're like that Baylor team that won last year. If you want to compare them to one of the great teams, they're like that team. A bunch of transfers, a bunch of older guys. Baylor went out and got a bunch of transfers who will get in your face and play defense and will out-tough you. And Florida looks like they've got those guys, too. So it's going to be an awful lot of fun to follow, so we'll watch. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to get back to some Jaguar football. The importance of this game, we touched on it at the top. What happens? How do you go about that? What do you want to see from Trevor? What do we want to see from the Jags? What might change? What could change us next day with us?
Actually, one of his better games. You know, there was some surrounding cast that at times didn't do very well. But, you know, Trevor would be the first one to tell you when he doesn't play well. He played, in my mind, he played well. You know, good enough? No, not good enough. But played well, made some great throws, scrambled when he had to, made the right reads on some of, you know. So we just got to, you know, we got to put it together in all areas, and we're not right now.
It's a Nimnik Tuesday on The Frangie Show. Nimnik, your friends in the car business since 1941.
Thanks to our friends at the Nimnik family of dealerships. Nimnik Chevrolet is on Cass at Nimnik Buick GMC is on Phillips Highway. Head to NimnikChevy.com to find out all about the terrific, terrific automobiles from them. They do a wonderful, wonderful job. My friend Billy Nimnik, Lee Nimnik, the wonderful family, they do a great job. Nimnik, if you want to buy a car in this market, proud to be a spokesman for Nimnik. You hear about them every Tuesday on our program as well as other days as well. You heard the comments of Urban Meyer talking about Trevor Lawrence. I do sense there's an effort to protect Trevor, which there should be. I don't worry about Trevor's mindset. I don't worry about his self-esteem. That's the least of my concerns. Anywhere for you on that?
I'm starting to just be a little concerned that I've started to see some frustration that I haven't seen before. So do I think by the end of the season he's going to be an absolute wreck? No, but I think he's going to have some trying moments over the next 7 weeks.
I'm concerned just about I want him to know this isn't how the NFL will be. If this will be the worst year of your career, if you can get through this year, in terms of what's around you, it will get better. I just hope that he knows that, and that he has people around him that can share that with him. Because it's harder. They've made it harder for him than it should be. And hopefully with the resources that they will have next year, he will have a much better team around him. So that's my only concern. I think he's mentally tough. I don't necessarily worry about it, but I can imagine how frustrating it is when you have that public a job and every time you go out there, I mean, they've yet to score. Have they scored like 24 points in a game this season?
I don't think he's...
The most points they've scored, I mean, this is remarkable. The most points they've scored in a game is 23.
And that's 10, games in. That's not three games in. That's 10 games in. Yeah, the offense has been far worse than anybody expected it would be. That's the reality. The offense has been far worse. They haven't thrown a touchdown pass since Seattle, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And that certainly wasn't a meaningful touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't. It's been a tough go of it. There's no question.
They've only been in the 20s outside of that win against the Dolphins when they had 23 points once. Yeah. When they had 21 against the Bengals.
So Hayes, as you look back and try and assess why the offense has been this bad, the ultimate answer before I even ask is going to be all of the above. I get that.
Right.
But as you assess Trevor, Darrell Bevell not doing a good job calling plays. They didn't do a very good job finding receivers. They don't have an overall plan. The injury to James Robinson. Again, I know overall all of the above is the answer. But if you had to break down the all of the above, how would you do it?
I think the number one thing is they lost two guys that they couldn't afford to lose. If you had told us in the start of training camp that DJ Chark and Travis Etienne were going to have seven touches combined this season, you'd have said, yikes.
That's a really good point.
Because
they're different than the other guys.
Yeah.
Not just they're good, they're different.
And that's what's happened.
Yeah.
I mean, DJ Chark catches seven passes, gone for the year. You don't even get to see what Etienne can do because he – hurts his foot in the preseason and is out for the year. So, I mean, that is difficult. I mean, that automatically puts you in a tough spot. I mean, say what you want about DJ Chark. He is clearly their best receiver. If DJ Chark had played in these 10 games, I guarantee you he'd have more yards than what Marvin Jones has, which is 486, and he'd have more catches. Again, DJ Chark, now, some of this was garbage. A lot of this happened in the Houston game, and that was garbage time. But he had seven catches for 154 yards and two touchdowns. That's 22 yards a catch.
Yeah.
Their top three receivers right now in terms of receptions, this is their average per catch. 11.6 for Jones, 10.2 for Chenault, 11.7 for Dan Arnold. I mean, it is just – there's just no explosiveness. So I think those two injuries – for a team coming off a one-win season was just too much for them to overcome.
That's a great point because they're fast, explosive guys on a team that doesn't have anybody else that's fast, explosive. I will tell you, Laviska Shenault is battling and doing the best he can. He's a tough-nosed guy. I thought when they drafted him, he was a faster guy. He got drafted really high for a guy that doesn't run faster than he does. That surprised me. And I like him as a player. I think there is a toughness, and I think with enough fast guys around him, as a slot receiver that can play some running back, and I think there's value to him. But I thought the night they drafted him out of Colorado, he would be a faster player than he turned out to be.
Yeah, and I think people thought that too because he was injured so much while he was at Colorado, so they just assumed that once he got healthy, the speed would go right along with that, and certainly it hasn't. I think overall, you now add another person who's injured in Agnew, and you just get to the point where. Where is the speed going to come from? And I think that's the biggest question that Urban's trying to figure out, but it doesn't seem like he's figured it out. And so you have a reliable guy in tight end Dan Arnold, and as we talked about yesterday, they didn't target him. So it just doesn't seem like they're doing things to make things any easier on Trevor whatsoever.
I mean, look at it this way. Teams are bracketing Dan Arnold.
Right.
That's
how little you have to work with. Is that Dan Arnold, who is a good, player. I mean, I think he's in 1 through 32 starting tight ends. He's probably above average. He's not spectacular. He is being bracketed. I think you're going to – what San Francisco did is I think what you're going to continue to see is, okay, well, we're going to make sure you're not throwing it to him. And he's not good enough to beat that. And we're going to take our chances on the outside. And again, I don't know how the Jaguars combat that. And again, Darrell Bevell, sure, does he have some ownership in this, some accountability? Absolutely. But I still don't know how you would hand this group of players to any coordinator and expect positive results. I don't know how you'd expect it.
And once we got here, to their credit, they've tried now. Here comes Tavon Austin after the season. Here comes John Brown. Let's make Jamal Agnew a receiver. Let's go get Dan Arnold. They have tried to add to the core. It's just, man, oh, man, if you get the cut day and a guy's not on your team, this isn't baseball. This isn't baseball where you just go add. It doesn't work like that. You can have all the trade deadlines you want. It's the no-trade league. There's a handful of guys. Von Miller will get traded and impact the new team. But realistically, in this league, the amount of guys that will get traded, and in baseball, the amount of players that go at the trade deadline and impact the new team is 100 guys, 50 guys. In football, truly impact the new team.
It's three.
Three or four guys every year. Every year, as many as three or four guys. That's it.
If the Jaguars end up signing Cam Robinson to a long-term deal, do you look at that Walker Little pick and say that was completely wasted? They should have taken a receiver there?
I don't, because I think he's going to – well, you asked two different questions. Do I look at it and see is it wasted? No, because I think he'll help them. Should they have taken a receiver there? Yes. I have been screaming for a first-round receiver the last 2 years. I screamed for Justin Jefferson 2 years ago. I screamed for Elijah Moore this year. You screamed for Rondale Moore this year. I screamed from the mountaintop, draft receivers who have – I wanted Christian Kirk the year before that. I wanted Cortland Sutton back in the day. Get guys who have caught passes in college, who high-volume pass receivers in college. That's who's turning out to be good players.
Right.
High-volume pass – not guys that test well, not guys that outrun other guys at the combine – high-volume receivers in college, they're turning out to be good players.
Yeah, you want Chris Olave.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You want a guy that can say, I caught the most touchdowns
right.
in school history
yeah.
at a program like Ohio State.
Correct.
That's what you want.
So I absolutely think they this time around, they can't not do that this time.
I'll take Wilson and Olave, by the way.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm right with you. But this is the year they have to do that. And by the way, so I'm being honest, the year I said take Justin Jefferson, I also said take Javon Kinlaw, who's been kind of a bust for the 49ers. He's been just a guy as a defensive tackle. So I was wrong about – I said Kinlaw one and Jefferson two. I was wrong on one. It obviously would have been right on the other. So, but that's the whole thing. So back to the game. We'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, our final show of the week. Boy, it'd be good to win this game because I do worry about the narrative out there if they lose this one. The Falcons really are not very good. They have a new coach too. They're really a team in transition. They're a team really trying to find its way. Their leading pass rusher is Dante Fowler, who's just okay. He's got 2.5 sacks, I think, and he's their best guy, you know. And no matter what Dante could have become, he didn't become it. If he'd have become what he could have become, he wouldn't be a journeyman on a team that's not very good, right? And so yeah, boy, this is one – I never thought the Jaguars would be in a position yet where they're – you hear me say all the time, games you want to win and games you want to make sure you don't lose. They're different. I never thought the Jags would be good enough to be in a situation where there's a game you want to make sure you don't lose, but I think this is it.
I think it's it too. I mean, in terms of if they're going to be able to really capture any kind of momentum at all, I think it's got to start Sunday against Atlanta. I mean, again, we've talked about how much the Falcons have struggled the last two games. You know, Matt Ryan just doesn't look like the same guy. Defensively, they've got a lot of problems. They don't get after the quarterback, so Trevor should have a little bit of extra time for his poor receivers to work open and hopefully catch the ball. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't get this one, then I think it starts to get, pretty dire in terms of how long will this losing streak go, because now you're at 3, the Rams make it 4, the Titans, and I get it, they just lost to the Texans, so that one may be a little bit more in play than what you would have thought a month ago when Henry was healthy. But assuming you lose it, now that's at 5 before you're now going into the stretch where you get Houston and the Jets. So a 5-game losing streak at this point would just be miserable. I mean, to have to go through 3 more weeks from where we are right now of talking nothing but losses, and for them in that building getting over 3 more losses in a row is going to be really tough on them. So, yeah, they need to win Sunday. They really should win Sunday because I think defensively, I think of the 4 major units that are going to affect this game, the Jaguar defense is probably the strongest of the 4. And then Atlanta's
I agree.
Offense and defense is 2nd and 3rd.
Right.
And then the Jaguar offense is 4th.
Yeah.
But if the Jaguar offense can somehow muster 16 points, I think you'd feel like the Jaguars have a good chance to win the game because the Falcons' offense just is doing nothing right now.
Do we know about Cordarrelle Patterson and his health status yet?
No,
I know we haven't seen an injury report. Yeah. I don't know if you'd seen anything.
I think he was trending in a better direction than last week.
But again, to me, that almost fits in with the Dan Arnold thing.
Yeah.
Like, Cordero Patterson has been in this league for almost a decade. Like if is having a career year, but Cordero Patterson should not be a guy that beats you. And you know, Kyle Pitts could certainly get to that point, but even if they have Cordero Patterson, like this is a game the Jaguars need to play well in, and at least defensively, and make it a 60-minute game.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll say hello to our Duval County Scholar athlete, and we'll wrap up some thoughts on this Florida coaching search. After this, stay with us.
And now, this week's Scholar Athlete of the Week, brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialists and the Plumbers and Pipefitters Local Union 234 on 1010XL.
We love talking to our Duval County Scholar athletes, and this week it is Daryl Johnson, DJ, from Riverside High School. Hello, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Congratulations. All right, you play football. How good are you at football?
I'm that guy.
That's the best answer yet. I'm that guy. Tell us a little bit about your football career. What do you play, the whole bit? Where you want to go to college? Just tell me all of it.
I play offensive line for Riverside High School. I play tackle. Last year, my previous 3 years, I played left tackle. I moved to the right side of the line this year. I'm going to Wake Forest in January. Okay. On a full scholarship, that's pretty much it.
Give me height and weight.
6'4", 270.
Okay, now why'd you move from the left side to the right side?
Mainly it was because, like, in practice, it was just more competition. So, like, just trying to get that extra work because our best DN plays on left. He plays left end.
So you're matching his team at practice all the time. Okay, very cool.
That Wake Forest offense has been so explosive. How much fun is it getting a chance to know you're going to be in that system, and what's Coach Dave Clawson like?
It's fun getting to know I'm going to be in that system. There's some similarities to the offense that we run here at Riverside to that offense. So it's kind of like a lot of things transferred over. But Dave Clawson, he's a very genuine guy, down to earth. I really love him as a coach, his philosophy, everything like that.
So. Who's your favorite offensive lineman or player in general to watch, either in college or the NFL?
Trent Williams. He's something special. Like the way he exposed off the line, that's somebody whose games I try to match.
Right now, regarded as the best left tackle in football.
Yeah,
but with not even close. I mean, he is actually kind of pulled away from the pack. So you picked a good guy. Tell us about playing for Coach Small. He's a really good coach.
Yeah, he's a great coach. And main thing about playing for him, he preaches like having a mindset. He shows it too. Like with everything that he does, he's a great coach. I can't think of anything bad to say about him. He's a great guy. I mean, like the offense, the way he breaks everything down to the guys, like he teaches on a different level. Like he's prepared me to go to Wake Forest and like even like know a whole offense that I haven't really even been in yet. So yeah.
Hayes, I think he's one of the best coaches in town.
Yeah, no question really about it.
The best.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he's really good.
Wake Forest is obviously an excellent academic institution. How much did that factor into your decision, and what do you hope to study at Wake?
It was a big factor. Like just being able to know that they've had no players fail out in the 8 years that Coach Clawson's been there and that whole staff has been there. That was a big thing because most schools can't say that. So like that, and then I also want to study communications,
which is a great thing to study at Wake Forest. This past weekend, I'm pretty sure Jimmy Garoppolo tried to throw Trent Williams a pass. How good are your hands? Try to throw him a touchdown.
I want to say my hands are pretty good.
You also play golf and run track. How do you find time for everything?
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard, but it's just by like trying to find time for everything. I mean, my parents work at the school, so I'm always there. So it's never really hard, like having to go home and come back.
Is golf
so he can't
easy?
Get away, can he?
Yeah.
That's
exactly right. Is golf hard or easy?
It's hard. I wish I could say I was as good as my dad, but no.
Okay.
Golf's
There's
hard.
Time for that.
There you go. And Dad's in here with us. Daryl Johnson from Riverside is our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week on his way to Wake Forest to play football. DJ, great meeting you, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Great meeting you, too.
All right. Daryl Johnson from Riverside High School, our Duval County Scholar Athlete. He's a neat guy, and he's going to be a very good player at the college level.
Yeah, it'll be fun to track him.
He surely will, from Riverside High School. And again, O.J. Small is a really good coach. We don't talk about that stuff enough. He is a really good football coach, and he former player at Westside, then Forest High School, went on to play at Florida. Was a very good receiver at Florida. Came back to the First Coast and has been coaching at Riverside, and has done just a fantastic.
Yeah, he's an awesome coach.
He really is. All right, got about 10 minutes to go in the program here. Let's wrap it with this Florida coaching job and see where we're headed. By the way, Florida FSU this week. We'll talk a lot about the game tomorrow. It really is a fun, intriguing game for all the reasons. You know, second time in a row, by the way, interim coach in the game.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Odell Higgins, they didn't play last year.
That's right.
Odell Higgins in 19. It's the second time. And in 17, there's an interim coach.
Yeah.
So it's the second time in a row and the third time in 4 years there's been an interim coach.
Hasn't been a very stable last few years for our beloved teams.
Last time, I told you this the other day, the last time Florida and FSU were playing each other to get to a bowl game was 40 years ago. 40 years ago, and here's how long. I told you this the other day. 40 years ago, Florida won the game. Got to the Peach Bowl, got hammered in the Peach Bowl 26-6 by Andrew Luck's dad. Put that in perspective for you. Andrew Luck's dad lit up the Gators after the Gators beat the Noles to get to the game.
Wow.
Think about that. That's how long it's been. So the game will be fun to watch. We'll certainly talk more and more about the game.
I don't know if it'll be fun for the Florida contingent.
No, it won't.
I
think FSU's going to win. But it's back on the line. The line's back out now. Gators are favored. Go figure, right?
That
makes no sense.
Makes no sense to me.
And again, we all should have bet on Missouri.
The MyBookie line that I'm looking at right now, Florida's a 3-point favorite. Yeah,
and Vegas knows where the betting's going to go. I know Vegas understands where the bets are going to go. But I will tell you, I can't imagine, and I'm not trying to knock Florida when I say this. It's really hard to win an even game when they're doing all the things they've been doing, and you're playing with an interim coach. Interim coaches don't win the game very often. That's why I'm surprised by the line.
I would not take Florida in 14.5 points.
Oh yeah. Wow!
And they're a 3-point favorite.
Yeah,
I mean that to me. I said last week, Missouri getting 9, easy money.
Yeah, and then you were absolutely
right. And this Florida State getting 3 points in this game, easy money.
By the way, a 4-star defensive lineman, his name's Chris McClellan out of Oklahoma, he actually just committed to the University of Florida.
How about that?
Which is interesting because we've seen some decommitments, obviously, since Dan Mullen.
Why would you? It's great that he did, but he committed without knowing who the coach
is.
He
must be true believer, true Gator.
The
true Gator, or someone told him who the next head coach is and he likes him.
Greg Knox, good point. Greg Knox, by the way, said he's not changing anything. He's not changing the quarterback. But he also said that if Anthony Richardson's healthy, he will play. So what's your guess on that? Every third series like they were doing early in the year?
It almost seems like the interim has to kind of go along with what the head guy was doing. You know what I mean?
Because they generally do.
It almost seems like if Greg Knox were to play Anthony Richardson the whole game, that in his mind he'd be like – not being loyal to Dan Mullen.
I agree with that.
You know, so I decided
not to coach the game. He wasn't loyal to you.
Hey, I'd love to see it. I mean, but I've only been clamoring for Anthony Richardson since, you know.
Week one.
Yeah, the Reagan administration. So, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, belabor it now in the finale. But
by the way, you and everybody else. But you're certainly not on an island. Yeah. And, gosh, I sure would like to see Anthony Richardson play more.
But it doesn't seem like interims like come in and say, all right, what the head guy was doing that just got fired, we're going to radically change that. So I would imagine it's going to be Emory Jones. And Anthony Richardson, I think, will have a package. It'll probably be kind of what they wanted to do in the preseason before it all went haywire, is that Emory is the quarterback and, you know, Richardson will get his maybe 5 to 10 snaps and give the defense something else to think about, but isn't really going to challenge Emory Jones, as nonsensical as that became.
And I will tell you that it really does seem like that is the most intriguing part of this offseason, is of all of it. A, once who the coach is, what happens with Anthony Richardson? Does the new coach convince him to stay? I still think what Pat Dooley said 2 months ago or a month ago, I still don't see Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson both on the team next year.
No chance.
No matter who the coach is. So, and do they keep him? If he does stay and plays, is he good? Is he as good as everyone thinks? If he leaves and goes somewhere else, is he good? As good as everyone thinks? I mean, that is a very – the Anthony Richardson story is a very, very interesting one.
I think they could be on the same team next year just because there is so much change now that I'm not sure. If they both love being in Gainesville – they don't know who's going to win the starting job next year. And obviously to this point, we've seen is that they're really good friends. Is it necessarily their smartest move?
I hear
not necessarily,
you.
But they have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, the reason I don't think they will, and Hayes doesn't either, I think, is not because your point's a very good one. They're really good friends. They like to spend time together. But I think by now they're both pretty convinced they're starting quarterbacks, and they know they're not starting together there. There's only one quarterback position. So that's why if they're there together, they're telling each other one of us is going to be a backup. I would guess right now neither one of them thinks they're a backup. That wouldn't you say that?
I would, and I think Denny hit on something in terms of Anthony's perspective on it that I think is accurate, and I think it will affect Emory. Richardson's the better player. I mean, Emory Jones is not a good college quarterback. So I don't think Emory Jones is going to stay somewhere. Emory Jones may wait and see what Richardson decides, but my guess is if Anthony Richardson decides to stay, and I think he will be the priority for whoever the Florida head coach is, I think he's the first call. Hey, don't leave.
Yeah.
You're the guy I want to build around. Then I think Emory Jones isn't going to want to battle Anthony Richardson. I mean, the only reason that he hung on to the job as long as he did is Mullen had a loyalty that ultimately played a part in him losing his job.
I'll say this. Anthony Richardson is the more talented of the two. He's bigger, stronger, faster, better arm. We know that. I can't tell you I know how good a player he'll be because I don't. I don't know how quickly he'll process, how accurate he will be, how will he learn the college game. I don't know that. And I'd be lying if I told you I even have a gut. I don't even have a gut on that. But I can't wait to watch him try. But let's assume for a second that he stays, Emory leaves, just for the sake of the discussion, because that's probably what fans want to see happen. Anthony wins the job, and Emory turns out starting at East Carolina. I'll bet you Emory Jones is pretty good in that setting. Not great, but I'll bet you he does okay there. I never felt like Treon Harris was good. He could have gone anywhere else. Where did he wind up?
I don't remember.
He wound up.
I've blocked all that. He transferred.
He transferred to a smaller school. To a smaller division school. I don't remember which
Tennessee
one.
Tennessee State.
But I never felt like he was going to go and be a good player. I think if Emory Jones went to a place smaller, I think he would wind up being a good player. And so
the only thing wrong with him is his processing time and the interceptions. And if you play at a lower level of football or a different, style of
football,
he'll get better.
He'll
be better.
The processing time doesn't have to be quite
Correct.
As fast. No, that's kind of the point. So we'll see what happens. All right, folks, that's just about going to do it for our program. One more show this week. Tomorrow's our last show of the week, because then it's Thanksgiving. We hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll have one more show. A lot in tomorrow's show. Jimmy Himes tomorrow instead of Thursday. Pete Prisco tomorrow instead of Friday. We'll have our picks for you tomorrow. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming up tomorrow, and we're looking forward to it.
That means I need to come up with some games.
You do, or I might, but we'll certainly come up with some.
What
fun
were the
games.
Picks last week? I think I went 6-0.
Oh yeah, we didn't
did
talk
you again?
About it.
I think I did. That's funny how we haven't mentioned that.
I can tell you.
How about that?
I can
That's your first. Second one of those this year.
I think the first one was 7-0.
Yeah, Gibby the gap went six, has closed.
Gibby wow. went 6-0 and had a 7-point week. Yeah,
all right.
But we'll certainly mention that tomorrow, Gibby. I'll mention it again. 6-0 and a 7-point week. Very nice.
Well done. Yes.
It's also, you know what else is funny? How Gibby really never knows how he did until he does 6-0. Okay. folks, that's our program. Thanks for being part of it, but don't go anywhere. Jaguars Happy Hour comes up right now. J.P. Shadrick and Company in just a bit. We're out of here. For Gibby, for Lauren, for Hayes Carlisle, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.